Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode 302 of the podcast. And happy new year. You will be getting this on the 2nd of January, 2017, although I'm actually recording it on New Year's Eve. Very much looking forward to the new year. I hope you have started with a bang or a roar or a exciting time. I must say, I'm one of those people, I find the end of December quite depressing, but I love, love, love January. I love looking the year ahead. So I wish you all a very creative and successful 2017. And in keeping with the positive upbeat method of the show, today I have an interview with Nina Amir about visualization and positive thinking, which should help with the year ahead. But I also have a rather extended intro, as I'm going to share my roundup for 2016 and some of my goals for 2017. And as ever, you can find the links, various links in the show notes, which you can always find at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. But first, before I get into my personal stuff, in publishing news and how I think these trends will affect us in 2017, because there's a couple of things that I've just seen. First of all, the Amazon Echo, and I'm not even allowed to say her name on the podcast in case anyone is actually listening on the device. But the Amazon Echo was the best-selling device this Christmas, and the implications. I mean, we have one and she's probably listening right now, but the implications for audiobooks are pretty exciting. The audiobook market has continued to grow in 2016. And I think because of these Echo devices and Google Home and other AI devices in the home that enable you to listen to things while you're doing other things are really going to bring audio into the mainstream. Because at the moment, you know, there has been a big shift into audio because of people listening on their smartphones, but that on their headphones, but that is a very individual way of listening. Whereas if you think about, a family, in the living room and the kids want to listen to a story and you can put it on the device and it just kind of plays it out loud. It's a bit like going back to when people had radio and stereos that they kind of sat around. So we've certainly found that we're listening to more audiobooks together in the living area as opposed to separate on our devices. So I think that's a really interesting implication for audio. And the other thing I'd say on audio is I'm definitely doing more audio this year, but I will not be doing exclusive deals with ACX. There's one more I will do in the way that I have done the book 9 in my Arcane series, because that's how I've done it with my narrator. But going forwards, I will be doing non-exclusive deals with ACX, and I'll be looking at the other options for audio, which should be coming. There are many rumors of new audio options coming in 2017. So if you haven't got into audio yet, you know, this might be the year of doing it if your budget allows. I also made the decision, I know I said loads before Christmas that I was going to record my own nonfiction audio, and then I got a cough which just lasted so long. I think I had it for about a month in the end. It was the big bug that a lot of people got all over the world. But basically, I've now made the decision to use a professional narrator for my nonfiction, a British lady with a lovely voice and quite similar to me, similar age. So my other nonfiction books will be coming in audio, so you can put them on your Echo. The other trend, I was reading a guy called Rohit Bhargavar every year does non-obvious trend report, which is out on Kindle. It's only a couple of pounds, a couple of dollars, but I just read his non-obvious trend report for 2017, and it fits with something I've been saying and something a number of people have been saying, which is that beautiful print is going to be more of a trend in 2017. So we've got the, sort of two levels. One is, you know, the greater preponderance of digital, as in more people are reading more digitally, but they also would like to own beautiful print. Now, this year, 2016, I've bought a ton of print books, but they've all been picture heavy. So like I've got all these matte books at the moment that I'm using for research. I've bought, you know, just anything that's very visual or very tactile or very beautiful, I've ended up buying in print, but I don't buy sort of general nonfiction or fiction in print. I just have these kind of lovely coffee table style books. So that's something that I'm considering doing also with some of my own books. I'll be making some hardback editions for 2017. And also, as I've talked about before, I'll be doing a creative pen journal in 2017. And I think that this trend of beautiful print is something that indies can really take advantage of. I'm also going to a hand lettering workshop in January as sort of part of this sort of design focus. And I think having both, you know, sort of making the majority of our money digitally, but also having these beautiful print versions as well as print on demand. Print on demand should just be like another digital product. I mean, it really is. It's a digital file that ends up as a print product, but separately limited edition print type of stuff. So I think that's a really interesting trend. So audio and beautiful print for 2017 are my kind of big trend picks. Okay, so getting into my personal update, and I said I would go through every year. I do a roundup of my goals that I hit and missed for the year, and then which I do on the 30th of December every year, and then on the 1st of January I do my goals. So I'm going to sort of skim through those now before we get into the interview. And the very first thing I wanted to say was just that I am so grateful for this year, and thank you to all of you for listening to the show and for recommending it to your author friends and for supporting the show on Patreon, which so many of you do now, which I'm just so thrilled about. And I've had a number of emails recently from people who say they have stopped listening to some other publishing podcast, but still listen to this one because I don't focus on nuts and bolts of how to self-publish. So I'm really glad that I made that shift. It was a couple of years ago now, I kind of made the decision to focus more on the evergreen, sort of the mindset, the business, the bigger trends than the nuts and bolts stuff. We still do some nuts and bolts stuff sometimes, but thinking about these bigger issues and kind of lifting your head up and trying to keep things positive. So I really appreciate everybody who listens to the show. It means so much to me. Okay, so roundup of 2016. Obviously, it's been a bit of a rollercoaster year politically, but that's why it's really important to look back at what we have created. Because whatever happens in the world, and whether you're happy or sad about what's happened in various countries, I mean, there's been things going on all over the place. You know, certainly in Britain, it's been quite weird. And will, in fact, 2017 may be even weirder. But there you go. So just in recapping my goals. So my number one goal was to become a healthy author. And my goal was completing the 100 kilometer race to the stones, which I did in June. And it was pretty hardcore. And I could barely walk. What's so funny is I got really pretty fit for that. I did the 100K. I did a lot of walking. We did walking in Spain in the mountains. I did a lot of 10, 20 mile walks up until that big walk. And then I have to admit, I kind of fell off the wagon in the last sort of 4 or 5 months of the year, just kind of fell apart. So, and what I've noted in my goals is that, and in fact, now I'm back on it, you know, I did start yoga, which has been amazing, and my RSI is completely gone. So I absolutely recommend yoga. That's been probably the best thing. And I love walking, and we have actually booked for 2017 a much more hardcore walking trip in Japan, which is a level above something I would have booked for this year, like the one we did in the in the mountain Sierra Nevada was a level 3, and the one we've booked in Japan is a level 5. So it's sort of Mount Fuji and that type of thing. And so in order to get my fitness back again, we've booked that. That is in September. So essentially, I'm back on it. And this is the truth of health and fitness, as well as creativity and the writing life. I mean, doing the Race to the Stones, doing the 100K was a goal, and I hit that goal, but then I immediately kind of lost what I'd gained because I stopped. I didn't stop being active, but I kind of fell off the wagon in many, many ways, put the weight back on and all that type of thing. So what I want to do, you know, for my creative life, as well as my fitness life, is actually to make it much more sustainable and for the long term, and have these not such spike goals. So I have booked another 100K, but I may even cancel that because the 100K is a kind of really, really exhausting, and then you're broken, which is, it's not a very healthy way of doing it, to be honest. So I'm going to aim for the sustained healthiness in 2017. But you have to make your creative practice as well as your health practice an integral part of your life if you're going to do it for the long term. And I definitely learned that this year. In terms of my books this year, it's been, you know, I was thinking, because in 2015, I put out 6 books, and that's pretty hardcore, right? This year, I put out 2 books. I did Destroyer of Worlds, Arcane Book 8. I did finish End of Days, and in fact, I have here in my sticky little hand the proof copy, the proof print copy, but I haven't officially published it. That is on pre-order and will be out on the 31st of January, because I'm moving to Ingram Spark with print and for all of these things, so I put it out on pre-order. So I technically wrote 3 books, but I only published 2. The other book I wrote was The Successful Author Mindset, and that took so much longer than I expected, but it's really resonated with people. And I actually consider that book one of my, in quotation marks, best books, like one of the books I'm most proud of, because it's so personal. And I will possibly make a hardback edition of The Successful Author Mindset with beautiful hand lettering and some other things in it, because that means so much to me. I'll also talk about some of what I want to do in 2017. But in terms of my, you know, the indie output, I only put out 2 books in 2016. And when I talk about my income, it will be interesting. So I didn't do, I also wrote a commissioned short story, but that won't be out until the end of 2017. I have ended up collaborating on a screenplay. I failed, in inverted commas, to do my own screenplay. I did try writing a number of them, but I just can't do the adaptation. It's very hard when you've codified a story into a book to then adapt it into a different form. So I think it's easier the other way. I think it's easier to write a screenplay and then adapt that into a book. But yeah, so there was a lot of things I wanted to write that I didn't write, but I did also do the How to Write a Novel course, which I'm also very proud of. And I wanted to do that as a book as well, and probably spent a month sort of starting to write that book. But in the end, I just decided it was too big a deal to write a book called How to Write a Novel. It's just too much. So I'm really, really proud of that course, and it's helped a load of people get their novels written. But it wasn't a book. So yeah, technically I didn't meet my production goals. I did get the rights back to my German translation, which I officially get it back June 2017. I also I bought back the rights from my translators of my other books, except for one Spanish book. So I am essentially looking to sell more foreign rights in 2017, 2018. License my foreign rights rather than self-publish, just because doing the marketing, I just can't do it all. So I did do a lot of traveling and a lot of international speaking. The highlight, obviously, the Smarter Artist Summit in April, May with Johnny, Sean and Dave from the Self-Publishing Podcast. It was so great to meet them, who I've kind of known online for so many years, and a whole load of other people I met at that conference who I've known online for years. Also going to Digital Commerce Summit, which was just incredible. And also speaking in, well, I ended up speaking in Oregon, although I actually went along as a participant in Dean and Chris's masterclass. So that's been incredible. I got my travel wrong, as in I went to Israel straight from the US and I was sick and I shouldn't have done that. So once again, I think I say this every year, I need to schedule downtime in between speaking. Just hear me. I'm talking to myself now. I need to schedule that. So I've just moved on to using Google Calendar finally, after using a Filofax for so many years, mainly because I've been increasingly paranoid about losing my Filofax. So I really wanted to have something online. So I've moved to Google Calendar. And so now I'm really being good about scheduling time. I've already scheduled a couple of weeks in December 2017 when I will stop work, because that's probably my biggest regret this year, is that I definitely didn't schedule enough downtime and I got too sick. And when I'm sick, I can't do much. So, and I want to do so much more. So yeah, looking after ourselves is a really big deal. I said one of my goals was to provide a career path for authors on the Creative Pen. I think by doing my How to Write a Novel course, as well as my Creative Freedom course, which is how to make a living with your writing, I'm really pleased that I should have everything you need on the Creative Pen. I've got fiction, nonfiction, publishing, marketing, making a living. I really kind of have everything. So I'm very pleased with that course. It fills a real gap, and I'm going to be focusing on marketing that in 2017, because the initial batch of participants have really enjoyed it. And if you're interested in that, check out thecreativepen.com/write-novel. Then I put some unexpected 2016 events. The first was hitting sort of my 10-year goals and then discovering my next 10-year goals. So, and I've included on the blog post a picture of the business plan. And I'm really glad I found this, because I did this little image, and it was a big yellow piece of paper, probably A2. I think it's A2, you know, or really big, sort of hold your arms out as far as you can, a sort of big page that big. And I got some marker pens and I created a business plan of what I wanted the Creative Pen to look like. And when I look at it now, it's almost exactly what I do have. And it's kind of crazy that I did that business plan in March 2009. And yes, that's not 10 years ago, but you know, I started, the goals I had were kind of 10-year goals around income and creativity. And I hit that goal this year. And obviously, Jonathan, my husband, left his job in 2015 and he hasn't gone back. So that's obviously been a success. But it was weird, because when I hit the goals, and I kind of officially hit them when I did my tax year and went, oh my goodness, I've hit my income goals. I felt quite weird. I felt like, oh, well, what do I aim for now? What is the point? You know, yes, I can keep writing books. Yes, I can keep podcasting. Yes, I can make more money and give it to charity. And, you know, great. But I need a bigger goal. I'm one of those goal orientated people. And, you know, for me, I just need a bigger, yeah, something bigger. So I spent, you know, a few months feeling pretty aimless. And when I went to the US in October, I had written down in my journal, I want the next step. I need to know what the next step is. And at Digital Commerce Summit, I met some people who helped me start making some thoughts about what I wanted. You know, people making seven-figure, eight-figure, you know, and more money with their online businesses. And that was kind of one example. And then I went to the Oregon Coast Masterclass and met Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush, who've been, and I, you know, I say this all the time, but you need your online mentors, and they are mine, both of them, for very different reasons. You know, And I'm really thrilled to say that Chris will be on the podcast soon in the next couple of weeks. And it's funny, when you hear me interview her, you'll kind of hear me being all fangirly, a bit like with Stephen Pressfield, who's also coming back on the show in the next few weeks. But basically, I went to that masterclass. And in that week, which was very intensive, I came up with the next 10-year business plan, and it's epic. Now, I can't tell you everything on that plan, because until it's more clear, I don't really want to, you know, talk about all the details, but it will be unfolding. You can watch it unfolding, and I will be sharing a lot more in 2017 about that. But that was a huge unexpected thing that happened to me in 2016, hitting those 10-year goals and then coming up with the next 10-year goals. So I'm really excited about that. That's kind of sailing into 2017. Also, what was surprising was, you know, going through the first full year of working with Jonathan, my husband. And many of you will know, with your spouse, other half, partner, whatever, even just a business partner, I mean, it's can be stressful. We moved to Bath from London last year in 2015. And we've had a first full year in Bath, which has been awesome. And we actually even bought a car. Now, those of you who've been a listener to the show for a long time knew that when we left Australia in 2011, we sold everything, downsized in order for me to do this life change. And we got rid of our last car in 2011 and bought a new car, so 2016. So basically 5 years we haven't had a car, but I'm really loving having a car again. So we're definitely staying out in the West Country. It's a very different life, but I find it awesome in many ways. But with Jonathan, we've had a really interesting year. And the first year of adjusting to leaving a day job is hard for anyone. And, you know, he's had to adjust to a whole new life. And this year we've tried a whole load of different models of what he wants to do. And he's now found his next step. And I will be talking about that either in a minute or later on this year. I know this is a really extended intro, but you can always fast forward if you don't want to listen. So I'm just going to carry on. Then I also had set an income goal. So 2014, I set an income goal to double my income, which I did. And this year I also doubled my income, and that's pretty hardcore. So, and you can look at the figures on the blog if you like, but I think it's pretty good. in 2015, I exceeded the amount of money I had ever earned in my day job per year. And this year I have doubled that. So that's pretty exciting. And I wanted to share it as an encouragement. And I share a bar graph on the blog post, which is basically, you know, the classic upward curve from zero. And I've only taken it back to 2012. But remember, I started writing in 2006, and I don't have any accounts for 2006 to kind of 2008, 2009, and then I only went full time in 2012. I left in September 2011. I went full time in 2012. So my first year's income from this business is reported, and you'll see how small it is compared to now. So I thought I'd share that as encouragement. And for the first 5 years of writing, 2006 to 2011, it was negligible. And it was only after the first 5 years that it started to be significant. So I know that might seem a long time if you've only just started. But believe me, like, I'm looking back at 2012, and it seems like another life. It really does. So I hope that is encouraging. And what I was going to say is that someone asked me, Natasha, put a comment on the blog post and said, what explains my income doubling and then doubling again? So I thought I would just go into that, because that might help some of you. So I think it's a number of things. First of all is the use of paid advertising. So Facebook ads, BookBub, a whole load of things where I've been paying money for advertising, both to get email list subscribers and to get eyeballs on my books. So that's been a big thing. Before that, I had really relied on attraction and content marketing. Now, I still absolutely believe in content marketing. And in fact, I'm doubling down on content marketing in 2017. But the use of paid advertising has really grown my list. The second thing is moving to box sets and or using more box sets and also more promotional opportunities on sites like Kobo Writing Life and iBooks, which has grown my book income outside of Amazon. The sheer number of products I have. So I put out 6 books in 2015 and also did a lot more of the box sets, etc. I got into audio. So the number of products I had went up to something like, it went from around sort of 25 to sort of 45, because each of those books are in ebook, different ebook formats, audio, print, box sets. So you can turn one book into those multiple streams of income. So I grew the number of products I had by a lot. The next thing is the acceptance of self-publishing in the US and UK markets, which basically led to my blog traffic. So the traffic to the Creative Pen in the last 3 years has been exponential growth, because there's been a cultural shift in the acceptance of self-publishing. Now, I started blogging in 2008 when self-publishing was vanity and unpopular. So I have one of the oldest blogs in the self-publishing space. So, and Google rewards quality content for the long term and older URLs. So what's happened to my traffic and hence my affiliate income, even things like my Amazon affiliate sales, a whole load of small affiliate links have now grown to quite significant income because of the traffic to the blog. And that's literally a cultural shift and doing something early in a market that was initially very unpopular. So 6 years of howling into the wind paid off. And the final thing is the growth of online courses in the author space. So previously, I've had online courses since 2009, but basically, and in 2014, I gave them up. And then towards the end of 2015, I picked them back up again. And obviously 2016 has been a bigger one. So I've been selling my own courses and also being an affiliate of other courses. And many of you guys have joined those courses this year. So I think online education is a growing niche, and absolutely, I think that it's well worth doing an online course if you have some kind of knowledge that you're ready to teach others. So those are some of the things that have grown my income. So I hope that's useful. So I can't believe we're almost at half an hour already. This is going to be such a big episode. Oh, well, we'll just carry on. So my 2017 writing and creative business goals are absolutely mental. But this is my favorite time of year. And I like setting mental goals because, you know, I feel reinvigorated by, you know, changing our business plan for this year. So I'm pretty excited, and I've split my goals, and this goes out on the blog, on the Creative Pen, on the 1st of January. So just check the show notes, but basically you can have a look at the blog post for all the individual details. But basically I've split my goals into various different subcategories because we are splitting the business into new things. So first of all, the Creative Pen and my non-fiction as Joanna Pen. I am continuing with the podcast. In episode 300, I committed to go to 400, and so did Mark Lefebvre and Kobo. So we are doing another 2 years of the podcast. So that is awesome. And thank you again to all your support on Patreon. That means we carry on. I am going to do more with the Creative Pen website. I'll be doing more posts, more, trying to be more useful and also trying to make things easier to find, because there's something like 1500 individual posts and pages on the Creative Pen. So it's pretty massive now. For nonfiction, I want to put out the third edition of How to Market a Book, audio editions of The Successful Author Mindset, How to Make a Living with Your Writing, and also How to Market a Book. I'm also working on 2 other books this year. One is going to be well, at the moment, the working title is The Shadow Book, which is going to be about the Jungian shadow and how to use it in your writing, and about not self-censoring, which is something I've struggled with. So using your own darkness in your writing. Plus, I'm going to do something on creativity as a collaborative book. Might even do something on dictation, because Jonathan has picked up dictation like a crazy person. I mean, amazing. He's just doing it. And I've seen his example and I'm kind of embarrassed. I did Destroyer of Worlds with dictation, but I fell off the wagon. So I'm going to give that another go, and maybe we'll collaborate on a book on dictation this year. I'm doing a limited number of speaking events. So I will be in Australia and New Zealand in February. I will be in London, May and November, as well as London Book Fair in March. I will be in Scotland in September and the US in October. I'm actually speaking at the Oregon Coast Masterclass with Dean and Chris, which is exciting. And all the links are on thecreativepen.com/speaking if they're available to book. So if you're interested in coming and meeting me live and hearing me speak and joining one of my high energy events, then check that out. So that's the Creative Pen and the Joanna Pen. Then we are setting up a small press. So I've talked about this before, but we will be revealing that website in the next couple of weeks. We will be doing hardback. So I've been putting all my extended distribution into Ingram Spark. And again, I'll be blogging about this soon. I've got a massive blog post on From Indie Author to Small Press coming soon. So we'll have a new website, which will be aimed at book buyers and rights buyers. So our really big focus for 2017 will be licensing rights. And that's something that Jonathan will be looking at. We're moving to Ingram Spark for the extended distribution. As I said, we will be publishing 3 books in a sweet romance series under a new author, which I will announce later this year. I'm not writing it. I'm just the commissioning editor and publisher. But we are not open to submission. I've mentioned this before. The press is not open this year. Starting to practice on other people. and then also I'm going to do a hardback premium creative journal in time for Thanksgiving. So that's my goal, is to do a beautiful print creative journal. And I've had, you know, so many people say, oh yes, and why don't you do a creative pen? And I'm like, okay, I might look at that too, but I want to look at the print products first. So that is one of the goals. And if you would like to start helping me with that, I have a form that you can fill in at thecreativepen.com/journal. And that includes some questions on what type of journals you like. And that will help me to start getting some ideas. And of course, I will talk more about that later. I've also got an interview with John Lee Dumas coming up in the next couple of weeks on his premium print journal that he's done. It's more like a workbook, though. Mine will definitely have, a lot of blank pages to write stuff in. Like, the whole point of mine will be to write. But it will also include, you know, nice hand lettering and some of the Austin Kleon style stuff. But I want your ideas on that. So thecreativepen.com/journal. And we will create something amazing this year, or lots of amazing things between the lot of us. So going into the exploitation of intellectual property rights, Jonathan will be appearing at some point this year, in 2017, on the blog, on the podcast. Very excited to share what he is doing. But we're essentially getting much more into intellectual property rights, licensing, and so much to learn in that arena. So really, really excited there. And then my shadow side, JF Pen, so my fiction writing, as if that isn't enough already to be getting on with. Oh, I just love having massive goals in all these different areas. You know, I have so many, we all do, we all have these different areas. And, my fiction, I think I've given up the idea that I will only ever just write fiction. I think I've made peace with that. I'm acknowledging that I am somebody who has to have all these different things going on. That doesn't mean that you have to. So as JF Penn, I'm End of Days is out January 31st. And if you haven't seen the cover, it is awesome. I absolutely love it. But then I always love my covers now. My designer, Jane Dixon Smith, is fantastic, but this one is brilliant. The tagline is, "The thousand years are ended." And if you know your Bible, then yeah, you might get that from Revelation. But this is a really fun book, and yeah, really excited about that. I'll be putting out, because this is book 9 in the Arcane series, I'll put out my third 3-book box set for the Arcane things. I'll also be doing the audiobook box sets because, as I've mentioned, the 3-book box sets on Audible are selling so much better because they are better value for a Audible subscription credit. So I'll be putting another ebook box set up and also another 3 audiobook box sets, as well as the individual book. I will be doing a collaborative dark fantasy novel to be announced in the next month or so, which will be exciting. I'm also going to do the first novel in my spin-off from the main Arcane books, which will be out of New Orleans, where I will be in March visiting, and that will be fun. I'm also going to do this map book series. Well, at least I'll plan it and hopefully write the first one or maybe 2, depending on if I can get into dictation, I should get a lot more of this done. I've been working with the screenwriter on a treatment and a pilot for the London Psychic books. Well, she's been writing it, but we've been talking about the treatment and things. So the goal will be to sell that or license that to a studio. So that'll be fun. I will also be going to Thriller Fest in New York in July, which is for my JF Penn side. I will also be launching a new genre specific website, supernaturalthrillers.com, because for years I've been moaning that my fiction falls between the gaps of the established genre conventions. I fall between thriller, action adventure, horror, dark fantasy, crime. I just fall through all of those gaps and I don't fit in any of the boxes specifically. So I was like, do you know what? And there is a category on Amazon called supernatural thrillers, but it doesn't appear on their search side. It appears with the search, but it doesn't appear on the drop downs if you're going through your Kindle. So I'm going to start this genre website and I'm going to start an email list for supernatural thrillers. So I will really appreciate your recommendations of the books that should be considered for that site, because it's going to be a real genre site. So I'm starting with all the books I've been reading for the last 30 years. So it's going to be a destination website for readers. I have tried this on JF Penn, but because it's very hard when it's your own website, it's easier when it's a genre website. So supernatural thrillers is not JF Penn. It's going to have tons of other stuff on and tons of other authors, and I'll be promoting other authors more than myself, but of course my own books will be in the mix. So that will be launching in the next few months as well as all the other things doing. And then so that's the 3 main brands sort of aspects. So the Creative Pen and Joanna Pen, the Small Press and JF Pen, those are the 3 main areas. And then my mental and physical health, I am intending to take more time off. I know it doesn't sound like it, but I am. And obviously booked that walking trip, going to be doing more yoga, going to just try and take care of myself and not be sick so much this year. That's very important. And then the income goal this year, I'm just going to go again with doubling the income. Now, you know, I am an ambitious creative and I think that setting an example is a powerful thing. And my little niece was born this year, Jasmine. She is just gorgeous. And I want to show her as well as my older, my cousin's children, my goddaughters, you know, my other relatives and friends and your kids and you guys, that you can have a very good, empowered, creative living. So I'm aiming to double again and we shall see. And if I do everything I've just said, then there's no reason why it wouldn't. So I hope that that encourages you. I can't believe how long this intro is, but there you go. So That is my roundup of 2016. My 2017 goals, I would love you to come to the blog and look at the 1st of January post and add your goals in the comments, or join me on the Facebook page, facebook.com/thecreativepen, and add your goals there or somewhere. Because if you write down your goals, they are far more likely to happen. So what I did yesterday was I printed out my goals for 2017 and I've stuck them in my journal, and they're printed out here in another page on my desk, and I will just look at that over the year and keep resetting. So really excited about the year ahead. Okay, another couple of things. First of all, there is a webinar this week. So into other things now. I'm doing a webinar this week on writing fiction for non-fiction authors. So if you're a non-fiction author, or you're maybe you haven't even written a non-fiction book, but you're a into business writing and your day job makes you feel like you're not creative enough to write fiction, but you really, really want to write a novel, then come and join me for a webinar this week on the Thursday, 5th of January. So thecreativepen.com/Jan5, J-A-N-5. That is short link to the sign up. That will be a webinar hosted by Joel Friedlander at thebookdesigner.com. So writing fiction for nonfiction authors, thecreativepen.com/Jan5. And that will be super fun. I really want to help some more nonfiction authors, business writers release their inner creative this year and write novels. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets. Here is a short selection. Thanks to Brenda for sending a picture of her hiking with her cat in the snow. Her cat, Keone, often go for a hike where she listens to my podcast. She's named after the nymph snow goddess and the daughter of Boreas, the god of the north wind of Greek mythology, which is awesome. And it's a really great picture of the cat sitting on her shoulders. And really cool that you go hiking with your cat. I love that. Hello to Darren, who listens to the show while commuting from York to Leeds every weekday, dreaming of escape. Hello to Talia Tate Boena, great name, listening to the show on the way home made my drive a breeze. Happy 300th. Suki Jutler says about the show with Pamela Wilson last week, now I know what content marketing really is. Great show. Luke Condor with lovely picture by the canal says walking around Manchester and diving into the latest episode. And Amar Vyas, hello Amar, who does the My Kitab podcast about the Indian market, says, loved the episode 300 of the Creative Pen podcast. Super high energy, lots of useful info, waiting for episode 400. That's 2 years, Amar. I hope you're going to listen in the meantime. Okay, so we are going to get into the interview, if you're still listening, very soon. But I just wanted to say thank you again for supporting the show on Patreon. My time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a massive thank you to everyone supporting the show. Thank you to new patrons, Hyla Rogers and Howard Carson. And thank you to everyone who continues to support the show for just $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month, less than a coffee a month, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio. And of course, you can ask me even more detailed questions in our secret Patreon-only Q&A. So come along and support the show at patreon.com, P-A-T-R-N, no, patreon.com/thecreativepen, and get that extra monthly Q&A and a whole year's worth of backlist. Right. Let's get on with the interview with Nina Amir, and I will be back next week. Happy New Year! Today, I'm here with Nina Amir. Hi, Nina.
Hi, Joanna. Nice to see you.
Yes, great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Nina is the best-selling author of How to Blog a Book, the Author Training Manual and other nonfiction, as well as an author coach and trainer, award-winning blogger and professional speaker. She founded National Nonfiction Writing Month and the Nonfiction Writers University. And her latest book is Creative Visualization for Writers, which we've got lots to get into. But Nina, you have such a long career in writing. writing. Just give us a bit more of a background of how you got into writing and why you write nonfiction in particular.
So that's kind of a funny story, but I'll start at the beginning. I actually wanted to be a novelist when I started out. And, you know, I was one of those people who read under the covers and, you know, I was reading all fiction. And I told my mother that, and she's very practical. I don't think she meant anything bad by what she said, but I said, you know, I want to be a novelist. And she said, well, only really good writers can make a living as a novelist. So I took that to mean that maybe I wasn't that good a writer.
Aww.
And so, well, I don't fault her because she was being practical, and it set me on a trajectory that changed my life, really. And I took a class with in high school with a teacher who was teaching journalism. And I got really turned on by it. And I realized that one of the things I read was nonfiction, and that was magazines. I loved the magazines that, you know, were telling you how to do things better, how to improve yourself. You know, like at that time, I remember reading Self magazine. Mm. But anyway, so I went to college and I got a degree in magazine journalism. And realized that this, you know, that I really loved this. And it gave me a superb training in everything from design to editing, yeah, everything. Anyway, so I went out, I was a journalist. I worked for some magazines and I worked for some consultants and did a variety of things. And at one point, somebody asked me to edit a book, and it was a nonfiction book. And I remembered what my professor in college told me, which was that if I could write an article, that I could edit, if I could write an article, I could write a book. Mm-hmm. Because a book was just a bunch of magazine articles all on the same topic tied together. And so I thought, okay, well, I've been editing magazines, I've been writing for magazines, I should be able to edit a book. And I did. Mm-hmm. And the next book I edited went on to be quite successful. And so I edited a few that were picked up by big publishing houses and did very well. And so after editing for a little while, I thought, you know, maybe I should write a book. My professor said I could do it. Maybe I should write a book. And that became my focus. But in the midst of all of that, you know, I had this business where I was writing and editing. And I started a blog, you know, my blog, Write Nonfiction Now, and then did my November event, Write Nonfiction in November, or National Nonfiction Writing Month, and began to really hone in on this nonfiction area. And I was interviewing and working with so many experts that, you know, when you do that for, it's like you with your podcast, right? The more you immerse yourself and talk to experts, the more you become an expert. And that's what happened. I became an expert on nonfiction. As well as blogging because of the one book on blogging and the blog. But anyway, so through all this, what I realized was I really had a passion for both publishing and writing and for personal development and practical spirituality, which were two of the areas I really wanted to write about. And so I believe that, you know, the people who write nonfiction have this opportunity to make a really positive and meaningful difference in the world with their words, that they can transform lives. And so that's what really turns me on about nonfiction.
Ah, but I know what everyone's thinking now, which is, are you writing a novel?
So the idea for National Nonfiction Writing Month came out of me doing NaNoWriMo. I had an idea for a novel, and I have to admit, I had about 3,000 words already written when I started NaNoWriMo, but I wrote another 50,000, so I completed. And I do have it, and I pitched it at the San Francisco Writers Conference one year and got a lot of interest in it. But I write nonfiction, and so the book needs some help. It wasn't, I mean, everybody loved the pitch. You know, the storyline works. It's just that I need to, you know, get rid of adjectives and it's just technical stuff. And it starts, you know, probably 50 pages later than it should. And, you know, it needs some work. So eventually, yes, there will be a novel.
Oh, good. I'm glad because, I'm really interested because, of course, I started with nonfiction and moved into fiction. And I think when you are good at writing nonfiction, actually you realize writing a novel is very different. And there's a whole load of stuff you have to learn. And there is a big mindset shift to kind of start again, which is what you would basically have to do. But I wanted to bring that up because I know a lot of people have self-doubt around their ability to write creatively. And that was, you know, one of the questions is so many nonfiction authors say that they wish they were creative enough to write fiction. But actually, right. there's a lot of creativity involved in nonfiction. So maybe, you know, how can nonfiction be just as creative, do you think?
So first of all, I think I would ask those people listening or watching to think about memoir, because memoir is nonfiction. I mean, it falls solidly in the nonfiction category, but it has to be written like a novel. Now, that's why I don't edit memoir, because to me, I would have to have those skills, right? So it's very creative. You know, you're working with a true story, but you need fiction writing skill to do it. So that's number one. I mean, there are essays, right? Essays can include anecdotes and that storytelling aspect that's very creative, but it's nonfiction. You can write nonfiction books that are peppered with personal anecdotes. And so there again, you have to tell the story, right? And a lot of memoir now is mixed with nonfiction. I mean, straight nonfiction or prescriptive nonfiction. So they're weaving their story into the actual nonfiction book. But all of that requires some novelist-like skill set, right? And then I really think that when it comes to prescriptive nonfiction, it is a creative process like any other. So I think, you know, you have the novelist over here saying, oh, nonfiction is not anywhere near as creative. But I don't think that's true. I think any writing is really a creative endeavor. And, you know, you're trying to take your reader into consideration and decide what's unique out there and create something that's totally new. That's a creative process, right? Mm. And I think all of that is creative. Plus, the thing to remember about nonfiction is that you're solving problems, and problem solving is creativity. Mm. If you were to, you know, look at some definitions, problem solving is definitely creativity. And that's what nonfiction authors are doing. They're solving problems, they're answering questions. And again, I would just go back to, you know, writing is creative no matter what type of writing you choose to do. And so I think separate this.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And in fact, you know, the act of creation is putting something new in the world. An idea, everyone can have ideas, but actually creation is making something new in the world, whether that's fiction or nonfiction or whatever else it is, a painting or whatever. So yeah, right. I totally agree with you. I think that I find the mindset issue with a lot of nonfiction authors is they feel that they can't, you know, they can't use the word creative about themselves. If, for example, they write a technical manual on a programming language, they think, oh, you know, they might be labeled by someone as not creative. And it's like, no, that's crazy. You know, you're creating value in the world and you're creating wealth out of those ideas. But related to that, so, you know, your new book is Creative Visualization for Writers. So we're basically saying that's true for fiction or nonfiction or whoever. Right. Yeah, whatever you're writing. And I wanted to kind of start with the word visualization, I guess. What do you mean by visualization? Because I think some people might struggle with that word in the title.
Right. So it's basically using your mind's eye to picture what it is you want. Now, you know, the very famous book that mine is titled after, it wasn't my choice, it was my publisher's, is Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain, right? And her whole concept has been put forth into the law of attraction and deliberate creation. We've used lots of terms for this, but we're basically, you're using your mind to think about what you want. And that can be a successful career as an author. It could be more money. It could be a new car. What we're talking about in terms of writers, we're visualizing ourselves holding our book. We're visualizing people buying it at the bookstore. And the reason for that is because the more you visualize something as already having happened, the more you actually convince your subconscious mind that it's true. The subconscious mind doesn't have a way to distinguish between what's real and what we picture. And that's why athletes use visualization all the time. It's not a different process. They're visualizing, let's say a marathon runner, I always use that as an example. They're visualizing themselves taking off in the first steps. How do they get going when the gun goes off, right? And then that middle part where their legs are tired, you know, they can't breathe, they're so hot, they're just thinking, I can't do it. What do they do at that moment? They visualize in advance what they'll do there. How will they re-energize themselves? How will they shift their mindset to, I can do it. I know I can do it. I can do it. I'm doing it, right? And then, you know, the runners who always at the end of those marathons, they suddenly, you know, the last 2 miles, they just like fly ahead, right? And they win. This is what they're visualizing. Okay, I'm at the 2 mile mark. What happens here? Mm. And the body, as they're visualizing this, the mind is sending signals to the body, firing off muscles, just as if they were running the race. It's the same thing. So we're just trying to train ourselves in advance to be able to do what we want to do. So it could be sitting down and writing, right, every day. So visualize that before we ever get to the computer. But we can also visualize what we want to create because, you know, not only are we convincing our mind, we're actually putting out energy. Our thoughts are energetic. And so we're putting out that energy. And that's why if you want a new blue Prius or Mercedes, I don't know if you have Prius over there in England, but you know, if you want a new blue Mercedes, you know, the more you think about wanting it and having it, the more you're going to see them around you.
Mm. Yeah. And it's interesting there. So you're talking about physical things. But when I think about back to 2006, I actually wrote an affirmation about my life, which I kind of is similar to visualization, I guess. I wrote the affirmation, I am creative. I am an author. And, you know, at the time I couldn't even say it out loud. I wrote it down. I wrote that over and over again. I said it in my mind, but until I couldn't say it out loud for a number of years. And of course, 10 years later, I'm living that affirmation. And I am creative. I am a writer. Doesn't necessarily have a physical, well, it has a physical manifestation, but I was imagining that kind of future life. So how do people come up with what their affirmation should be, even at the point where they might not believe it? And of course, most of the listeners, it will be things like seeing my book, you know, on the bookstore, or making the New York Times list, or leaving my job, because these are hard to even conceptualize when you're a long way away.
Right. And I want to say that about before I answer that, that affirmations are kind of a, they're like a lead-in to your visualization, right? Because you said, I'm creative, I'm a writer. And I don't know what you thought about when you did that. But when we say those words, we're thinking it, right? Mm-hmm. And if you can actually sit down and visualize, what would that mean? What does it look like in to have that life, a creative life, a life as a writer? You know, what does that look like? So that becomes a physical thing, right? And you're feeling it and you're thinking it and you're focused on it. But so to answer your question, there really are two ways to create an affirmation. Typically, what happens is we notice that we have a negative thought or a limiting belief. I'm not creative. I can't write. I'll never be a writer. I'll never be an author. You know, whatever it is, this is too hard. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not a good enough writer. And so we notice that. And what we want to do is turn that around. So we want to create an affirmation that is, I am a writer. I am creative. Every day I write, you know, instead of saying, you know, I can't write, we're affirming every day I'm becoming a better and better writer. And I'm doing that by sitting down at my desk and I'm writing, right? So that's number one. Number two is to begin with what you want to create. You wanted a career as a writer. Mm-hmm. And so we begin there. I'm a writer. I'm creative. I have a career as a writer. And no, at first the mind is going to say, that's not what we have. And so that's why sometimes it's better to not say I have a career as a writer if we're struggling with that. Better to say I'm creative. I'm a writer. And then do affirmations of action. Actually sit down and do the action, right? Because you have to affirm it and then you have to actually take action towards it.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that's, I've said before on the show that I believe, whatever you want the word, in the law of attraction, as in I've used it in my life to create the life that I want. But I think that some of the more mainstream books like The Secret haven't really emphasized the action part of attraction. Right. So, you know, you've worked with a ton of successful authors. What are the actions that they take to manifest those visualizations in the world that other people can model?
So I think that they, so first of all, you know, action really is where the action is. And I think for anyone listening, whether you believe in the law of attraction or not, this I think was the missing piece you know, we talk a lot about visualizing and affirming and all of that, but you have to actually do something in the world for something to happen. So actually the Kabbalists would say that action is where the action is. So what do successful authors do? What actions do they take that make them successful? First of all, they write regularly, whether it's a blog or articles or a manuscript. They're not just talking about writing, they're writing. Right. So that's the first action, is if you want to be a writer, you have to write. And we've all heard that. Right. The other thing is they're moving through their fear and insecurity. This is an action. They do what they know they need to do, and they do it courageously. That could be sending out a query letter or getting up on stage to speak or self-publishing or whatever it is. They're doing it. I mean, I can't imagine that you in all these years that you didn't have moments where you'd felt afraid or insecure, and yet your books are out there, right? Your blog is out there. You took action on that. They also do things that they'd rather not do. So what I hear from a lot of aspiring authors is, you know, I really want to be an author, and everybody keeps talking about platform, and I just, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't like promoting. Successful authors do that. That's an action they take. They embrace this as part of becoming successful, and they build platform. They promote their books. They take care of business because it is a business. I think they also do spend time visualizing. I think they're visionaries. They see the future, their future. They're mystics about their own lives. And so they spend a lot of time planning and thinking about it. And how will I get there? And what do I really want? And why do I want it? Mm. Right. And they, in that way, they are utilizing, you know, whatever you want to call it, the conscious creation or Napoleon Hill's principles and think and grow rich. Right? They're spending time thinking and feeling what they want as if it's already created. And then they take that action towards towards whatever they want, whatever is necessary. They're doing it. They're not holding back. I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, we could pick apart lots of little things they do. But I think the last thing I'd say is that they're working on their mindset, because we stop ourselves. Other things don't stop us. Yeah, we might have challenges, you know, that come up, but we don't, those don't stop us. It's our response to that stops us. And typically that's happening up here. And so successful authors take action in terms of working on their personal development. They're trying to change their negative thoughts. They're trying to be more courageous, more secure, more confident. They're trying to be more productive, to have more energy, to be clear about where they're going, to influence themselves, to do what needs to be done.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. And that's why I wrote The Successful Author Mindset earlier this year, because I was amazed that people didn't realize that everyone feels this self-doubt. And it's how you just not overcome the self-doubt, but how you live with it, how you just live with the feelings of I'm not good enough, and yet you do it anyway. And in fact, this creative dissatisfaction seems to be an important part of creativity, because if you were happy with what you created, you could just go die, right? I mean, you finished. But if you create something and then you're like, there are a few things that I need to improve, I'm going to write something else, and I've got these other things. And the point is, we're never finished until we do die, which I think is really cool. But I also wanted to ask you there, you mentioned the sort of self-help, the learning, as well as the craft stuff. And so that action stuff is really important. But the other thing, and you also mentioned sort of having to learn platform, but I really like Tony Robbins talks about this sort of what will you give up, or what will you give in order to achieve what you want? Because you can't just say to the universe or creative spirit or God or whatever you believe in, I want to be a successful writer. Just give it to me. You know, there has to be something that you give up. And for many writers, it's time. but what are some of the trade-offs that writers make along the journey?
Yeah, I think we do make a lot of trade-offs, and I would hope that anyone listening doesn't see the trade-offs or this giving up as something negative, because it's getting us where we want to go, right? So I think that's important. And along with Tony Robbins, I already mentioned Napoleon Hill, but he also emphasizes both giving and receiving, right? And so I think that yeah, and anyone who's read any of my work knows I'm really into Jewish mysticism, into Kabbalah. And there's this whole idea of giving. It's a continuum of giving and receiving, giving and receiving. But, you know, so that's just important to keep in mind, because I think giving and receiving are kind of intricately linked. But so what do you have to give up? What are the payoffs? I think that you have to be willing to, again, to get very conscious of your mindset and what you're thinking and give that up, because typically that insecurity, that those negative thoughts are not helping us. And so we're doing something to change that and to change our habits, right? Because we have, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And so one of the things we have to do is change ourselves. So that's a giving up of you know, what we normally would do in order to change, to do something different that's going to help us succeed. You also have to be, you have to commit to follow through. So if you start, you're going to have to look at what do I have to do to finish this? So maybe you had to give up time to even get started, but in order to finish it, is there anything else you have to change or give up? Basically you're giving up anything that doesn't support your goals. And that could be television time, right? Or it could be reading that novel every night in bed instead of going to bed earlier so you can get up earlier and write. You might have to give up people who don't believe in you because they're holding you back, right? You have to, as you said, give up time. Sometimes you have to give up money, right? It's a sacrifice if you're achieving any goal, but you know, going back to Tony Robbins, he would say that you need to only speak and see the truth. And so I think for me, that's giving up false stories that we create. You know, that idea that I can't do it or it's hard.
I don't have the time. Yeah. Who has the time?
Exactly. So it's giving up denial, Joanna, because these are excuses we have and we have to give those up. See, I think more than anything else, we could say give up, you know, watching TV and reading books and going out for lunch with your buddies or whatever. You know, we could talk about all of that. But the fact is that this is about having no excuses. If this is what you want to do and you're committed to it, then you have to honestly look at yourself and say, what is holding me back? What are the stories I'm telling that are not serving me in getting where I want to go? And I think that is the biggest thing we're giving up, is our habits, our mindsets, our stories, so that we can actually move towards our goal.
And that visualization is kind of visualizing a new story. You know, about what your life will look like. But it's interesting because, yeah, the money thing and the time thing, when I wanted to do this, I would get up at 5 a.m. and write before work. And then I went to 4 days a week and gave up 20% of my income in order to do this. And then, you know, eventually gave up my job. And I think it took 5 years, 4.5 years to get back to the same income I was on when I quit my job. So, but those were things I was willing to do because that was more important to me. And you talk in the book about values, which I think is so important. And again, it's, you know, obviously we read the same self-help books like Tony Robbins, because values are so important and deciding what your value is. And for me, when I did, you know, the sort of idea around values, I come up with freedom over and over again. Freedom is my number one value, which shapes decisions like location independence and running my own business and not answering to anyone else. And I like money, but I was willing to give up money to have freedom and build that up. So, you know, how have values impacted your own journey? So make it kind of personal, and how does that shape your work? And also, how can people decide what the values are?
So like you, I value freedom a lot. I haven't worked for somebody in I don't know how many years, and I'm lucky to have a husband who has supported me quite a bit financially, but you know, that definitely was a value for me, was freedom. But I think I also think of that as independence, right? I don't want to work for a boss. You know, I want to be independent and do what I want to do. So that, I think the two go hand in hand. So that's definitely influenced me working for myself for all these years, and finding ways to earn an income from what I know how to do rather than going into an office. I think I value almost more than that, making a difference. I think that informs what I do daily, even blogging. I mean, like you, I'm a big blogger. I mean, I actually have several blogs, and I was thinking about it just the other day. You know, why the heck do I keep doing this?
Because I have that a lot.
Yeah. And everybody keeps saying, Nina, you do so much, you need to give up a blog. And I'm like, I can't give up my blogs. You know, first of all, they promote my work. But beyond that, I actually like writing them. You know, I'm a writer at heart. Yes, I speak and I train and I coach and I do all these things. But I started out as a writer. And so I really feel like I make a bigger difference with my blogs than I do with my books. And I hate to really say that, but more people read my blogs every day than read my books.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little sad to admit, but it's true. And the fact is that I get more like emails and comments from people reading my blog, you know, who will take the time to write to me and say, thank you so much for writing that. That made a difference to me. And so that making a difference is a huge value of mine. And I think a lot of my work revolves around making a difference, you know, whether I'm educating or inspiring someone to write a book or start a blog, when I'm writing something for publication or coaching, it's about making a difference. And then I think another value I have is what I would call, I think, personal power. It goes with personal development, right? It's that I am able to discipline myself. Right. And that I am willing to change, to see how I need to change in order to grow and be better and succeed. So it's this working on myself to change. And so self-empowerment, I think, goes along with this idea of helping others, transforming others. You know, I'm basically empowering others. And so a lot of my work revolves around empowering others as I'm also trying to empower myself.
I think we're exactly the same person.
Like each other.
I mean, you know, that empowerment message, like I feel that's the message of the Creative Pen, is it's empowering creatives and authors to understand their own worth, almost, because it's incredible to me how many creative people just haven't put any sort of value on their own worth, and their mindset is always a kind of negative one. So I really like what you were saying there. And I guess when we're saying shaping the values, do you think those values came out of your action? So you took action and then you developed those values, or do you think you always had those values first? So what came first, the action or the values? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I think values, I think we develop values over the course of our life. Some of them are given to us by our family or our environment, and some of them we develop. You know, I'm thinking back that I started reading probably one of the first, I guess I would call it personal development books or practical spirituality books that I read was Richard Bach's Illusions. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, this is so great. And so in that sense, you know, it was something that developed. It started there, and I developed a passion for personal development and personal growth and spirituality and metaphysics. And how does this all work? How do we create something from nothing in our lives? Right. And so, and I think for everybody, you know, they have to look at that, you know, how do they develop their values? Well, some of them are given to us, and are those really what we value? Right. We have to begin to question them.
Yeah, and others develop over time. And, you know, particularly important because this will go out in the beginning of the new year. And as we're recording this, the end of 2016, it's been a very difficult political year for both America and the UK. We've had, and continuing into Europe. And I mean, a difficult time. And there's a lot of, I think there's way too much negativity in the world, like in terms of the press. And I get emails from people who feel very affected by this sort of negative shift. And, you know, what does that mean? How can we keep this creative, positive, action-focused visualization? How do we keep on that straight and narrow path and not get distracted by all the naysayers and the winds of change or whatever? How do we stay on the path?
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if you know this, but in 2015, I became a certified high performance coach. I had been studying Brendon Burchard's work and had been gone to some of his events, and I actually was coached by one of his coaches and decided to become a certified high performance coach. And the reason was because I look at people like him and Tony Robbins, and they're so disciplined, right, about where they focus their attention. And you can talk to other people who will say, I don't watch the news or what, but it was more, I'm looking at them and they're so disciplined. I mean, in a good way, not, you know, we have negative connotation to that, right? But I think that when you ask, how do we not get distracted? How do we not get swayed by this? And here in the States, I can tell, I don't even like going to Facebook anymore. I'm like, oh my, you know, how do you get anything done? So for me, it's this self-discipline. It's personal growth. I became a certified high-performance coach because what I see is that writers don't write.
Yeah.
They don't write because, and they don't build platform and all these other things because of what's going on here and because they don't have self-discipline. One of the things we talk about in high-performance coaching is influence or persuasion. Well, for a writer, influence is hugely important, right? We need to have influence in our target market. But before we can even do that, we have to have influence over ourselves. We have to be able to persuade ourselves not to go to Facebook when we're supposed to be writing, to not think about what's happening in the world when we're supposed to be writing. And I'm not saying you have to stick your head in the sand, right? And not be aware. And, you know, if you want to be an activist, you know, to not do those things. But if you want to create something in terms of written words, you have to learn the discipline that goes with that. And the other thing is that the people get negative and they get depressed, right? And we have control of that. And I'm not talking somebody who's clinically depressed, okay? But just sort of the general malaise, right? We have control over that. We can generate a different state of being. We can generate different energy. We can generate a different mindset. It's all a decision. It's like Tony Robbins says, a decision happens in a moment.
And you can change your life in that moment. Yeah,
that's right. But then you have to be committed to that change. And and as he says, you have to take massive action. So it isn't like saying, oh, I'll just turn off Facebook. It's I have decided to watch to go to Facebook only 30 minutes a day. And it's after I've done all my writing, because during my writing time, I'm going to focus on this. And I'm not only going to focus on my project, I'm going to come to that project with a positive and enthusiastic mindset and with energy. And so what am I going to do that? I'm going to do, Tony doesn't call them affirmations. He calls them incantations, right? So I'm going to get to my desk. The only difference between those two, by the way, is that you're using your whole body and you're saying the stuff out loud. So it's really like an incantation. But, you know, so I'm going to come into my office and I am going to stand in front of my desk and I am going to say, I am creative. I am a writer. I am an author. I'm ready to write. Yes. And you're going to have your little power move, you know, yes. And you're going to do all that, right? And then you're going to sit in your sit down and you're going to do 30 deep breaths or whatever it is to energize yourself. So that's the difference. I think it's a matter of the self-discipline and commitment to actually protecting your writing space, protecting your own well-being.
Yeah. And I would say to all the quiet British people listening, you don't have to go all full on American screaming.
Right.
But no, I do. I mean, I agree with you. And I think I agree with Tony's thing about you can change your life in a moment if you take action and make that thing. And I think when I decided on that affirmation, I am creative, I am a writer, I think I changed my life. I think I set off the path that has led me here today by that one decision of what my creative visualization is, which is why I think your book is really interesting, because I think some people, it will help some people get to that point, right? They'll get to the point of helping them decide what that might be for them. And you don't have to be a full-time writer. That might not be the thing that you want to eventually achieve, but there you go. Anyway, I also want to ask you before we finish, two more questions. One, about blogging, because you are a big blogger, as you said, and you and I have connected over the years through blogs. We met very early on, I think, like 2009, I think we first crossed paths on Twitter and blogging. And I know a lot of people have doubts about blogging now because the world is even more noisy. What do you think in terms of blogging for a non-fiction author in particular? Is it still necessary for a non-fiction author to have a blog, or what do you recommend?
I I still recommend it to every client that, you know, and at every conference, because since it is so noisy, the point is that we as authors, we want to have visibility online, right? We need to be findable, discoverable. And the best way to do that is with a blog, because Google is cataloging, you know, it's indexing the new content that you're putting up there. And it's, if you're writing on one topic, you know, then it's going to, you're going to rise up in the search engine results pages. I mean, how to blog a book. When I started that blog, I had nothing. I started from scratch, like everyone. And at first there were no readers. And in 5 months, I had number one Google search engine results status, and I've retained it because I wrote about one topic and I wrote frequently and consistently and I kept up with it, right? I mean, all these years, I could have left it be after the book came out. But so I think if you want to be discoverable, you have to be blogging. And the other thing for a nonfiction author is that you want to be seen as the expert. You have to be the authority. And so there's this whole idea of authority blogging. But I think if you're writing on a topic, I mean, you're an authority blogger. If you're writing on a topic as an authority, even if you're learning as you go, which most of us are, and even if you're just sharing what you've learned, you are the expert then, the authority. And you then have some first. So first of all, there's that. You put yourself out there as an expert. Number two, you have expert content, valuable content to share. And I think the biggest problem is if you don't have a blog, what are you going to share? You're only going to share other people's stuff. And I'm all for curating content. I think it's important. But more important is to share your own content across the social networks. And if you don't blog, you don't have that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And in fact, I am doubling down on content in 2017. Like, I feel like, you know, I want to do more content, you know, not just books, but more blogging and, you know, more audio and more video. And it's funny because, you know, I think people feel like it's too late, but we're only just beginning. You know, there are billions more people arriving on the internet shortly.
Right. That's right. And there's so much you can do. I mean, like the video, I think the video is enormously important today. But you still need to have content, written content. Google is still looking for a minimum of 300 words underneath that video on your blog if you want to be indexed well, you know? So there's so much we can be doing and combining it, and the, you know, like the podcasting and the, you know, so you take the audio, we can do so much. And I think it's more important than ever. I think the noisier it is, the more you have to not shout, but just continue to speak. Continue to speak and put yourself out there so that the right people find you. And by right people, I mean your people, the people who need to hear your message, that want to hear your story.
And of course, you become an authority by putting it out there. Neither of you or I were an authority before we started doing this. And then you become one over time. So don't worry if you're listening and you're like, I'm not an authority. No, none of us started out that way.
That's right. I mean, think about my blog, How to Blog a Book. Excuse me. I was never set out to be a blogging expert. I just saw the blog to book deals happening and said, you know, what if you just wrote the darn book on your blog instead of trying to figure out what to do with all that content afterwards? And I wrote it, and, you know, I blogged it, wrote it, and, you know, suddenly I'm a blogging expert and a marketing expert. Because of that, they think I'm a marketing expert. And I'm like, really? That's what happened.
Well, and this leads me into the final question, which is about longevity and also making multiple streams of income, both of which, you know, you have. So if you had written How to Blog a Book and then only done that, would you have a full-time business? I don't know. I mean, maybe you would. But actually, now you've got all these different things going on. You have not stopped at one book. You've not stopped at one blog. You doing all this other stuff. So how, and you know, I've said this to other people I've known for years online. How did you make it through? Because so many people that we met back in 2009 have disappeared. So how have you continued to do this? And what are your kind of your secrets for balancing creative with earning money and growing your business?
So I think the reason that I've stuck with it is, first of all, I'm enormously stubborn. Like, I really hate to fail and to give up on things. So that's number one. Once I start something, I really feel committed to finishing it. And I think a lot of people start a blog, for instance, and then they go, oh, this is too hard. And they just give it up. And that's just not me. I think, though, that beyond commitment is purpose and passion. I think if you don't feel a sense of purpose for what you're doing, you know, and that ties into your values, of course, excuse me. And if you don't feel passionate about it, then you're going to have a hard time sustaining it long term. You know, I always talk about that, you know, you have to combine your purpose with your passion, and that's when you get inspired and you take inspired action. And I think that when you feel like you're on purpose and you're doing something you're passionate about, you will be inspired to action on a continual basis. So I think that makes a big difference. I think there's also that desire to share your message or your story or your expertise. And if you have that strong sense of, I really want to help people, I want to serve, mm-hmm. you're going to keep going, even if you have 5 readers or you sell 2 books, right? You're just going to keep going. So I think it really comes down to your big why. Why are you doing this? You know, are you emotionally connected and committed to the work you're doing? In terms of growing my business, I do a lot of planning and brainstorming. Mm-hmm. I'm really kind of never like you were talking about, I'm never satisfied, which, you know, could be a bad thing, but I'm just always looking for how to improve and what I could do next. And I have a lot of ideas. There was a time in my life I thought I had no ideas. Now I suffer from, you know, too many ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the past, I threw them out there as fast as I got them, which is why I have a ton of courses and nobody knows about them, because I would create them, right? And then I didn't promote them because I was on to the next thing. And so these days, I think in terms of being successful, what I'm trying to do is to focus on a few things. No, I'm not going to get rid of my blogs. You know, I'm still going to have my little umbrella site, ninaamir.com, which leads you to all the different things I do. But I'm going to focus on building a few things per year. Which doesn't necessarily mean I'm not going to offer something new, but I'm going to limit how many things I'm taking on. There'll be rhyme or reason to it, as opposed to, oh, that's a good idea, I'll do that. Mm. This is what I'm focusing on this year. So it's looking at where I want to go and what I want to do and creating the business around that, you know, while keeping in mind my readers and clients and customers. What do they want? But also, what do I want? Because I think if we're not doing, in terms of sustainability, if you're not doing what you want to do, you will not keep it up. So it's that happy medium between what do my readers and clients and customers want and what is it that I want? And when you can find that happy medium, I think that really helps.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And those people who have stayed in the niche like us, I feel we really do love it. And we work hard and we love it working hard. And we're passionate about helping other people and creating things in the world. So, yeah, I've really enjoyed talking to you. And, you know, tell people where they can find the book and you. And, yeah, where would you like them to go?
So the easiest place to go is to ninaamir.com. So ninaamir.com to find the book. There are some books there as well that aren't on Amazon. But to find the majority of my books that are available on Amazon, you can go to booksbyninaamir.com. So booksbyninaamir.com, pretty simple. And then, you know, there are links to all my blogs right on ninaamir.com. But for those really interested in nonfiction, they can go to writenonfictionnow.com. So, and for those interested in blogging, they can go over to howtoblogabook.com.
You have so many URLs that are really good.
Thank you. But I just went through my whole list of URLs and like said, do not renew. Do not renew. Spending so much money on URLs I've never used and probably never will.
I know that. That's the I've got a really good idea. So I'll buy the URL so that I can do the idea later.
That's right. Exactly. Oh, and I have a page on author coaching. I need something on author coaching. Oh, I have a coach, you know, something on blogging. I need the URL on blogging. So, yeah.
Yeah. So everyone listening, do what we say. Don't do what we do. Anyway, Nina, look, lovely to talk to you. And yeah, thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome. I was honored to be on the podcast and great to see you and talk to you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook. At The Creative Pen. See you next time.